Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
I know that there is a bit of a tradition at Canando. You usually, not regularly, but sometimes, hold a morning session for beginners with the title Introduction to Zen, or Intro to Zen. I think this has been going on for as long as I've been coming to Canando. Are you still doing that sometime? Maybe once a year? Recently, I found piece of paper, two sheets that are the outline for the intro to Zen, the outline for the person who is holding it. It's was a pager, basically just two pages that I think at one point I got, and it's just two pages, and they're not just text, it's just short bullet points, a kind of Zen laundry list. So when I try to replicate this type of event here, in Pisa, where I practice for our small group, that's all I got. That's all I had to try to replicate the introduction to Zen that we usually say is for beginners. But I know that, at least I remember, I was always going to check what would Les say as an introduction to Zen. It's very curious all every time. And so I was even more curious to read his kind of teacher notes, you know, his outline. And maybe some of you also have those same few lines, but there is one bullet point, you know, there are a couple of bullet points on Zazen, like keep your back straight, like very, very simple things. And then there is one bullet point, one single bullet point on Buddha's teaching. And next to it, there's just one sentence that says, so that appearances are not equal to reality. So that appearances are not equal to reality. That's all. All the Buddha's teachings were in that intro to Zen are just this lie. And of course, when I tried to give that intro to Zen session one morning here, I just said those words. And immediately, one person asked, what does it mean? What are these appearances? Of course. And the funny thing is that I don't remember hearing Les use the word appearance very much while giving Dharma talks. to me, appearances, well, that sounds like almost like an Indian spiritual word, you know, philosophy. And of course, in Buddhism, there are many ways to explain this word, to explain it using other words, different terms, in an entire philosophy. But they don't necessarily make it much more approachable. They don't make much more approachable this word appearances, and for sure what it means, this little line. So Buddha saw that appearances are not equal to reality. In fact, for many years, I didn't realize that those few words on the intro to Zen cheat sheet for the teacher are directly the words from the Heart Sutra that we recite, you know, almost every time we practice, but not tonight. If you might remember that in English, maybe the second verse is, we chant, we recite, so that all things are empty. Okay, so it's just that. I was hoping to find a big secret in the notes from Les, and it is just the second line that we recite every time. And so that all things are empty. Avalokiteshvara. In this case. And we recite it in, by now I've been reciting it in English, in Japanese, in Italian, in French. And it's the one chant that for sure I've found that every Zen group I have practiced with, they recite that. Not even only the Soto group, also the Rinzai group or any other denominations. It's a very, very central sutra or very central scripture. You know, and in fact, as you know, in Japanese, we recite the whole Heart Sutra also for its, as a practice, for its sound. You know, just its superficial sound. And It's called the Dharani, one of those things we recite. And so that all things are empty. In Japanese, is when we go Shoken Gon Kaiku Do, Kaiku. Everything is empty. And I also found a text, a book on the Heart Sutra, a commentary on the Heart Sutra, more like a philosophical commentary on the Heart Sutra by Red Pine. That is a good reading. Where you can find this line also in Sanskrit. So this line is transmitted to us also in Sanskrit. This maybe it is really from India directly. The line of the Heart Sutra that says, so that all appearances are not equal to reality, can also be found in an Indian language, in an ancient Indian language, with the original words in which empty is the word sunya. Which you see all over the place in the traditional Buddhist scripture. And sunya, empty, here, has the meaning. So it's an English translation, not that the other languages do any better at this. It's difficult to capture the sense of appearance, of empty. It has the meaning that something which looks like something much is really nothing, you know? It has the overtone of something that from outside, you know, from outside there appears to be a lot, but there is really nothing behind. So just appearances. So, you know, it's a little bit different from what it might sound like saying nothing exists. It's a little bit different. It more means from outside to us, it appears to be a lot, but in reality, there is nothing behind this. Over the past year and a half, every other Wednesday, I've been reading on the Wednesday evening sitting, I've been reading a Dharma talk from Les' recent book, I Had a Good Teacher, titled I Had a Good Teacher. So we see it, then we recite the Heart Sutra, then we read a talk. And last week, we read the last Dharma talk in the book from the section of the longer Dharma talks. And the title of that talk is Beauty Beyond Beauty. And in that talk, Les says that talks exactly to this point, to this very point, this, explaining this line. And he says in that talk that we can't appreciate the nature of the empty nature. If we can't appreciate the empty nature of things, we become self-oriented. So he says that we crave connection with each other, but it slips away when we do not see clearly. And he means when we don't see things as empty. And then he explains this point with an example. He says, imagine you enter a dark room and flip the light switch to turn on the light. That's something we do all the time. And he says, when you do it, you probably don't even notice. You don't even notice the action of flipping the light switch. We do it automatically. We are not paying attention to it. We are not engaged with that specific action. At some level, we assume in that moment that there is something else more important that needs our attention. Without even realizing, without noticing, we create differences in our mind between certain activities and things and other activities. From certain activities, we disengage, we disconnect, we do them automatically. And if we pay attention, it's because we are in that moment thinking there's something else more important. So we are attaching some more value to something else, to maybe going in to the kitchen, going to the kitchen counter. So we throw the switch. And in that moment, Les says, we lose sight of the equal value of all things. He explains, we forget that everything is appearance, temporary, changing, and that all things share this temporary nature. You know, instead, we are impressed, we are very impressed by the content of an appearance. You know, we want to go to the kitchen counter. That's what interests us at that moment. And at some level, we lose respect for some other things. we don't recognize that everything is temporary, everything is an appearance, everything has the same value. And so, from this point of view, seeing that all things are appearances, or appreciating emptiness, as Les often says, means having reverence for all things. In the sense that we consider everything of the same value, precisely because we consider it everything of the same value, we approach it with reverence. Everything has the same value in only one sense, not if you look inside the appearance, you know, because if you look at, you know, an expensive car has more value than a small one. But they are all equal in being appearances, are equal in being temporary. And so even very different and faraway things are connected by this nature. And when we fully engage with what we are doing, you know, what is in front of us, when we don't disengage, but we fully engage, we lose ourselves in what we are doing. In that moment, rather than protecting an idea of self, we realize, we make it real, we actualize the emptiness of self. And so from that comes selflessness. You are lucky to have this word that means in English generosity, I understand. And so this selflessness appears naturally as part of seeing everything equal and equal to us, ourselves. So in this lecture, Beauty Beyond Beauty, that we read last week, in few words, Les is showing the fundamental link, the total identity, in fact, between appreciating emptiness, which is also known as wisdom, and generosity or selflessness. You know, that selfless engagement with everything and all beings or people that we call compassion. And in showing this link, he is also explaining how mindfulness and activity come in. So this point is really the heart of practice, the heart of his practice. Looking at all things, self and others, as appearances, treating them with equal respect, because we are all completely connected through our temporary nature. 2 or 3 years ago, I don't remember, Les stepped down from the abbot's seat with a formal ceremony at Canondo. He was already unwell at that time. And in that ceremony, his teacher, asked him something like, asked him one question. Something, it sounded like, now that you have stepped down from this endeavor, this like 50 years old, long or more endeavor, what next endeavor, next challenge or goal are you going to pick up? And those who were there know that Les answered immediately with a loud shout. Yeah. And nothing else. For Thanksgiving last November, I visited Les in Palo Alto, and twice over a couple of days, and we didn't talk about practice at all. And in that moment, in those days, he was in pain for his health condition. He didn't complain with me, and he didn't hide it. And he made it clear to me that he had no illusions about what he was facing. What I saw visiting him over Thanksgiving was less not taking a teacher posture at all. You know, he had even told to other students that he was not teaching anymore or practicing Zen anymore. And I think I saw him not trying, not even trying to perform his condition to behave in any special way because of his long Zen practice. Just a human being. And for me, you know, I had met him as a student, as a teacher, as a student meeting a teacher, his teacher. That was impactful. I noticed I also got a glimpse of the emptiness of practice, of its temporary nature. I think we are at the point we can have questions. Anna.
Thank you for your talk, Giuseppe. When I think of the word appearance, I think of what we put meaning to with appearances, how we'll see something and go deeper, the meaning of it. And so I wonder, you touched on wisdom, and I wonder if you would touch on beginner's mind with appearance and our practice.
Yeah, yes, you know, we always say we are the lineage of beginner's mind, from this expression from Suzuki Roshi. But not that it's easy to understand. In relation to what we've been talking about, getting a moment about the beginner, what is mind? And in here we can say, that mind is just this space in which appearances happen, you know, just the common nature of all appearances, their common temporary nature, is what we call mind. And so, you know, the expression is very beautiful. To call mind beginner's mind is a mind where things appear continuously fresh, you know. But it's a very good expression that can be used in many different ways. Is there something you had in mind?
I was curious. I'll think about it. Thank you. And I think there's a question for you in the chat, if you can see it.
Yeah, the thing about emptiness and appearances is a little, and like in the Heart Sutra, it says emptiness is form. Form is emptiness. And so there's something different about form and about appearances, at least happening in my mind anyway. And and like you said, emptiness doesn't mean non-existence. And so not only, I mean, it makes me think that not only are appearances empty, but emptiness is empty. And if we question, ask the question, what is it empty of? Which is, you know, stepping out a bit. So what do you think about this concept of this reference to form and this reference to appearances? Because if emptiness is form and form is emptiness, then emptiness is empty and form is form, and so. But I think there's some subtle thing they're making a difference about form and appearance, maybe. What do you think? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that done. It's like a pit that one falls into.
Exactly. I know. That's what I'm trying to say. These words and these ideas and these words can, you know, you just leave you in a pit. So yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a pit that we fall into. So for this sutra, these words can be studied in a very analytical way. I must say, you really need to be talented for doing that. And there are useful teachings there, but from the perspective that I'm bringing today, we shouldn't fall into the pit too deeply, consider it much. Don't consider it as a big deal.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
It's nothing to be too much impressed about that either.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Janet.
Hi, Giuseppe. It's great to see you. Thank you for this talk. Sometimes I think the translation of whatever word it was into emptiness is a problem. And I don't remember where I heard this, but someone suggested the translation should be not emptiness, but vastness. And that's kind of helped me understand it a little bit better.
Thank you, vastness. Thank you for this word. I think it is totally appropriate. Story about Bodhidharma and the emperor, you know, I think it ends up with Bodhidharma going away from the conversation, leaving the conversation mumbling, I imagine mumbling, vast emptiness, just vast emptiness, putting together your word with the sunya. But I'd be curious to hear how vastness resonates with you. For me, now it resonates. It makes me think of the grass that is growing here in the mountain. Many, many different sprouts, millions of vastness that grow in spring and all together go away, dry up in October.
Wow. For me, it makes me think of all that we do not know and cannot know. But it's out there.
Thank you.
Beppe, I think that Swati, who is no longer with us, sent you a message.
Yes, and I got my glasses to read it. He says, thank you for the talk and for sharing glimpses of interaction with Les, for people like myself who have heard about him and his talks, but never have had the pleasure of meeting him. My question is with regard to seeing everything as equal, all people, all things. Any advice on how to achieve that, given different people behave or may have different values than ourselves? Thank you for your question, Shwati.
I have a comment to add to Please. Janet's comment about vastness and emptiness. I also like this kind of interpretation or this way of approaching emptiness. I have two different kind of thoughts that come from that. One is the metaphor of if you take any object, if you blow it up in size, magnify it billions of times, make it very vast, you'll find that it turns into nothing because you'll be millions of miles from the nearest atom, right, that makes up the object, right? And so by recognizing its vastness, you also find its emptiness. And so the vastness and the emptiness of any particular phenomenon are two sides of the same coin. Another divergent thought on that theme, though, is just the idea that to be empty of qualities is to be empty of qualifications. Qualifications are inherently limitations. When we qualify something, we're putting a limit, a boundary on it. So to say that something is empty of qualifications, of qualities, is to say that it has no limitations, that it is infinite in potentiality, and infinitely vast, which is, I think, a very potent way of approaching the idea of emptiness. So just wanted to share those. Thank you.
Thank you. What is your name?
I'm Jason. Thank you for your talk.
Thank you, Jason. And yes, you know, we see how many thoughts come to our minds all around this topic. And I think what Shwati is asking, any advice on how to achieve this seeing everything as equal, given that different people behave or may have different values than ourselves. You know, this is maybe the question that I had in mind all the time presenting this lecture. It's the crux of it, you know, our practice is often presented either with more emphasis on wisdom and, you know, our meditation and our formal practices that we have monastic tradition for, or is presented with more emphasis on helping people, helping every situation, contributing generously to what is happening around us, and so also facing conflict, facing people that behave or have different values than ourselves, facing them with the acceptance, but also with trying to bring them our teachings and the message of Buddha. The message that, independently of what are our values, we are all made of the same stuff. And this should be creating a bound. It does create a bound across any difference of values or behavior. But it's not easy to be so accepting, and it's not easy to be always concentrated on the most important thing, that we are all in this together. It's very easy to end up focusing on a specific issue at hand, in which this is different by that, and my opinion is different from yours, and then there is good and bad and all that. So it's by behaving peacefully, relating peacefully and maybe in a relaxed way to each other, even to those who behaving differently, we show this understanding, and that's our practice. Thank you. But if anyone wants to add more on this, we can hold some strong feelings too here.
Seppi, it's 6 o'clock where you are in the morning, and you probably have to have your coffee now.
Usually it's 6 o'clock. I sit Zazen.
All right, there you go. Well, it's 9 here, and we're going to call it quits unless someone has a final question. Anyone? Great. Oh, one more.
Hey, Giuseppe. How are you? So,
Kumar, I can't see you, but I see your hand.
So, I think this story has been repeated quite a few times, that somebody sat, I remember one person, actually Dave repeated the story, but I've heard it too, that somebody came in and said to Les and Doku-san during the one-day sit, I'm having a really bad sitting. My legs hurt, my back hurts, my mind is running away. And he said, no, there's no, so it's just bad zazen. He said, no, there's no such thing as bad zazen. Go back, sit down. And at the end of the day, when you know we were packing up, this person came and bowed to Les and said, oh, thank you for not letting me go home. I actually had a really good zazen. And Les looked at him and said, no, there's no good zazen. You know, go home. And so it, and so you know, you reading about appearances, and I was thinking one of the things that we never talk about is like, you know, the form is visible, and what is invisible is we never talk about that, and maybe in some kind of translation, what happened was that it's emptiness is form, and form is emptiness. May have been that emptiness is fullness and fullness is emptiness. Because Buddha said that this rises and then that rises. So he never said this or that. He said this rises and that rises, which means there's a connection between those two. So what we're calling emptiness is not really emptiness. The way that I'm seeing it and feeling it is more like there is fullness. And realizing the fullness is realizing the perfection of each and everything in that moment, and coming to realize that, you know, that we're just perfect all the time. We just choose not to see ourselves as Buddha. We choose not to see ourselves as Christ. But we, you know, we are constantly deluding ourselves, saying, I'm imperfect, I'm imperfect. So that's what I was thinking, you know, it's like Buddha just leveled it out and said, you know, your form and your emptiness, your fullness, and you're empty, you know, so don't get so stuck up on this. Just live your life and sit, you know, that's what it is. To me, that's what comes across with Les's message too, that he was talking about living, you know, bringing our practice into everyday life and making it a living practice rather than getting too caught up on, you know, this is this or this is that. It just, you know, so it's more like both things are rising. Emptiness is rising, fullness is rising, you know, so there's no bad meditation, there's no good meditation, you know, it's just is. And so I think when we get too complicated about things and we start using a microscope to split the hair, we get into trouble sometimes. So that's how I was looking at it. But thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, the nice thing is that we all know the theory, so we can just go back to... making it real.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.